NY Oil.
Goes by the name of NY Oil.
NY Oil, a brother.
And that's NY Oil.
NY Oil.
The NY Oil. NY Oil.
Can you pronounce your name properly? Is it New York Oil or is it something else?
It's just NY Oil.
Uh-oh.
Y'all, this is NY Oil. What it is, what it is, what it is. What's going down, man? Thanks for coming back and tuning in to another episode of Power Concedes Only the Power. Worldwide, world famous podcast hosted by your dude, NY Oil. The ideal. You know, just want to give y'all some little information real quick. If you want to call in and be a part of the program, hit me up at 206-339-8324. That's 206-339-8324. You can leave a message and have your voice and your comment or question featured on the next episode of Power Concedes Only the Power. I really enjoy when y'all call. So, you know, definitely, if you're listening to, give me a holler. Let me know what you think, all right? Also, the website that I mentioned about the return of the podcast, nyoil1.ning.com, is outstanding. It's doing really well. I think we have like 130-something members right now. And the conversations are rousing, beautiful, you know what I'm saying? A lot of great contributions. We just added the Dre Parker Show to our site. So every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, his show comes on. So great addition. Definitely support. It'll be on tonight. You know, I'm doing this on Wednesday, so we'll see. But in any event, definitely check it out, man. NYOIL1.ning.com. It's a winner, man. It's definitely doing some revolutionary things. And I've got some things coming up that are going to be mind blowers that you're going to say, wow, this brother really got his thing on point, man. But it's going to be me, but it's also the inclusion of all the good help and good support that I'm getting. So shout out to all the original members of the site who, you know, just came on board because I asked them to support a good a cause. So what I want to do is get into Alicia Keys' situation. That's what today's build is about. I'm going to take my calls, too. So I'm going to try and make this brief. And, you know, what I implore everybody to do is, you know, just, I spent a couple of hours today researching some of the stuff that I'm talking about. So you're going to hear me reading a lot. So if I get my Hooked on Phonics on, you know, don't make fun of me for having a rough time trying to read and handle all these buttons and stuff at the same time. But, listen, it didn't take me long to come to get some of the information that I got. And so I'm going to have to kind of be brief because, you know, you don't want your podcast to be longer than a half hour. So I got to keep it quick. But, you know, take some time to, you know, do the research, man. You know what I'm saying? Go online and find out. Or, you know, go to Google instead of searching Big Booty Hoes. You know, search names like, Eldridge Cleaver or freaking Marcus Garvey and, you know, J. Edgar Hoover, and see what you come up with. And that's what this build is going to go into as we progress. But I want to first start off with Alicia Keys. You know, there's a quote that she has in Blender where basically she says, and I'm going to paraphrase to save time, that she believes that Tupac and Biggie were essentially assassinated, that the beast was stoked by the government and the media to stop another great black leader from existing, and that she wears an AK-47 pendant around her neck to symbolize strength, power, and killing them dead. And that was reported on the recent issue of Blender where she's featured on. And so now there's a backlash to it. You know, you see people online calling her an idiot, she's stupid, she's a fool, she's a conspiracy theorist. You know, it's threatening the value of a career because, you know, she said what's considered now in these days radical thoughts. And it's sad because now she had to take put out a statement to recant it, basically, or to correct it, where basically she says, you know, anyone who knows me and my character knows that I'm not a conspiracy theorist or by implication a racist. My comments about gangster rap We're in no way trying to suggest that the government is responsible for creating this genre of rap music. The point that I'm trying to make was that the term was over-sloganized by some of the media, causing reactions that were not always positive. Many of the gangster rap lyrics articulate that problem, the problem of the artist experience, and I think all of us, including our leaders, could be doing more to address the problems, including drugs, gang violence, crime, and other related social issues. And regarding the AK-47, she says it's a nickname given to her by her friends, and Jess is an acronym for Alicia Keys, AK, and a metaphor for wowing people with the music and performances, you know, killing them dead on stage. It was no meant to be a political or literal or negative connotation. And she feels that the release implication about her are too radical, too dramatic, and a departure from what she's continually demonstrated for herself, and that she's worked so hard to give of herself to bring about positive change in this world, which is very true. And she only wishes the effort received as much press and attention as that misrepresentation of her in the Blender article. Now, what I find sad about it is, one, that so many people have jumped up, you know, people that, if you're living in this country in these days and age, you should never doubt anybody or call anyone a conspiracy theorist with all the conspiracies that we're being party to and seeing manifest before our very eyes. Years ago, people was talking about behold a pale horse, and oh, they're going to put the Verichip in you, and oh, you know, there's going to be a cashless system, and it ain't going to be. Yo, that's like, we live in them times right now. The Verichip thing ain't but about a year and change away. So, you know, people are, you know, we're bearing witness. You know, people talking about, oh, 1984. I was a teenager in 1984. And I remember people talking about 1984 to George Orwellian. Oh, you're Orwellian. You're crazy. You think that kind of stuff's going to happen. That's stupid. Oh, he's a fool. He thought that would happen in 1984. It's 2008. He might have been off a few years. But this is everything that you talk about. Big Brother is watching. There's a video camera. There's a camera recording. Everywhere you look, there's a camera recording. You can't escape cameras now. Somebody's watching you everywhere you go. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I think people are a little too quick to write stuff off. We got these write-off statements. Oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. Like, that writes you off. That don't write you off. That might mean you'd want, oh, you're a free thinker. That's what that is. That's not, you know, you don't get rid off because of that. That's stuff to be considered. And that's not for nothing. Let's look at Alicia Keys. Last year, the New York Police Department classified documents revealed that they'd put Keys under surveillance prior to the 2004 Republican National Convention. The department released a statement explaining that they targeted those openly talking of anarchist actions. Keys, who had spoken publicly against President Bush and donated $500 to a Democratic National Committee that year, was suddenly labeled an enemy of the state. So, if she did have a conspiracy theory, if she did say that, I mean, is she not one to talk? Doesn't she got a right to say that? She can point to a situation where the government, the police, had her under surveillance because she was involved in the political process. What they would have you believe is what we're all supposed to do. But, you know, economics being what it is, the country being what it is, she has to disavow those statements. You know, but let's look at whether or not being a someone who's read Huey Newton, Assata Shakur, and David Hiller's autobiographies, as is quoted in at Blender magazine, or believing that gangster rap could have been created by the government and the media to stop another great black leader from existing. Could that possibly be? That of course couldn't possibly happen, right? Well, let's look at J. Edgar Hoover. J. Edgar Hoover, who became the assistant to the U.S. Attorney General in 1919, at a time of increasing popular radicalism, Hoover quickly made his mark. He was given the responsibility of heading the new section of the Justice Department, which was established to gather evidence on radical groups internally to the country. So they had already began the process of surveillance on what they considered radical groups. And, you know, the funny thing is that the Founding Fathers, those that wrote the Declaration of Independence, is a radical group. You understand? And had they not been allowed to do what they were doing, we would not have the country that we have right now. You know, dissension is an important part of growth in this country, an important part of growth in civilization, because dissension speaks to dissatisfaction. And to eventually get to a utopian society, people have to have dissension and speak on the dissatisfaction that they're experiencing in the larger body. You dig? And it is that dissension that promotes the growth and change that brings society to a greater space and greater place, and doesn't keep it mired in the same space that it's in. Well, you know, who was chosen in part for his reputation and diligence? He stayed up all night reading the radical pamphlets and literature. And after a time, he became their expert on radicalism. And he headed up a new division. He was responsible for organizing the arrest and deportation of suspected communists and radicals in the United States. So while I'm speaking on J. Edgar Hoover, again, Google his name. You know, don't rely on me. I'm just scrams on a mic. You know what I mean? I'm sitting in my house. You don't know what I'm doing. You know? How he becomes relevant is that we start to speak on Marcus Garvey. Marcus Garvey, who had soon rose to the top of Hoover's list of federal agents in collaboration with the New York City Police, had begun to report on Garvey's speeches as early as 1917. Now, in 1917, Marcus Garvey was invited by A. Philip Randolph to speak at, who was a respected, what they called a soapbox preacher. You know, basically these dudes would just jump up on a soapbox or a ladder and they would get to preaching, and you build your following because you'd be preaching whatever people's trying to hear. He invited Garvey to come speak at an audience that he had, you know, as he started to develop his thing. So, you know, by 1917, the police and federal agents were monitoring his speeches as early as 1917. But as the Universal Negro Improvement Association, the UNIA, its membership and the circulation of the Negro World newspaper ballooned in 1919, this organization grew. So if you don't know anything about Marcus Garvey or the UNIA, you know, one, shame on you. But two, not really, because go find out about him. You know what I'm saying? Go to Google Videos and put Marcus Garvey in. Yo, they got an hour-long build. It's a great PBS documentary. Very informative, very candid, beautiful documentary. Gives you a really good feel for how dirty he was done and what he had accomplished. But anyway, the UNIA was blowing up. It was people all over the world was recognizing the UNIA. So in 1919, Hoover himself targeted Garvey, referring to Garvey as a notorious Negro agitator. Hoover zealously sent about to gather damaging evidence on Garvey and his growing movement. Hoover and the Justice Department were clearly hooked on the fixation on Garvey, which would before long become a vendetta. So what ends up happening is Hoover had relied on part-time black informants to track Garvey's movements and UNIA activities. But in December 1919, his determination to go after Garvey led Hoover to hire the first black agent in the Bureau's history. By the time that Hoover discovered that it wasn't going to learn all it needed about Garvey without someone being able to penetrate the movement, the white agents simply couldn't do it. They were totally conspicuous. The first black agent's name was James Wormley Jones, known as Jack Jones. He was known by the code number 800. His job was to go into Harlem and to infiltrate the Garvey movement and to try and find evidence that could be used to build the legal case for ultimately getting rid of Garvey. Now, Garvey, to this point, has done nothing illegal at all. What he did do was develop a sort of a separatist attitude and begin to empower black people. This is before black power. Remember, we talk about 1919, Paul. So this is before your Malcolm X, your Elijah Muhammad's. This is before Martin Luther King. You dig? This is in these days. This is like right after slavery. This is, you know what I'm saying? This is not too long. This is before civil rights. He was developing a program to empower blacks internationally. And one thing that we learned, and you should look into the Black Boule, but you learn that there's a high penalty for blacks that think internationally. If you begin to start attempting to move on an international level, it's a high penalty for that. You dig? And that's another bill. I'm not going to get into that now because time is not permitting. So, you know, even as we look at that, is it plausible that the government was involved in the gangster rap, East Coast, West Coast beef, Biggie Tupac dying? All right, you still might not be with me on that. All right, so now here it is. Now we have the first black federal agent is a snitch, or a, what it, a better term would be an agent provocateur, or a saboteur, or a spy into an into civilian affairs. Over the next 5 years, largely under Hoover's direction, Bureau of Investigation officers report to the UNI activities in over two dozen cities in pursuit of Garvey would brought into several other, to seven other federal agencies. They were going to find some way of getting rid of Garvey because they feared his influence. Listen, they feared his influence. They feared the hundreds of thousands, the masses of blacks under his influence. Garvey rejected America, and they could no more agree to and accept a military rejection of America by blacks than they could accept a militant demand for full inclusion by blacks. Hoover determined, determination led him to take extreme measures to counter Garvey's growing influence. According to historian Winston James, they placed spies in the UNIA. They sabotaged the Black Star Line. The engines of the ships were actually damaged by foreign matter being thrown into the fuel. Now, again, if you don't know anything about Garvey, if you know very little, if you just know that Garvey had the Back to Africa movement, that you really don't understand how deep what I'm saying is. Again, look this up, man. Go just spend a, like, you know, just sometimes just spend a couple hours, man, just doing the knowledge for real. Check it out. First off, they feared his influence. Now, would you not say that Tupac and Biggie were influential? And let me say that I don't even want to include Biggie, because Biggie does not has not in any form or fashion that I, from what I've looked into, from my analysis of the dude on any level, does he appear to be a black, what do you call it, black messiah, which is the COINTELPRO, they always do to crush a potential black messiah. That, you know, he doesn't have that characteristic. This is just, truthfully, Biggie just kind of strikes me as a dude that was just a talented lyricist that used to sell crack in Brooklyn and Gates and Green type of area, you dig? But, you know, talented brother though. But, Tupac is another story. We'll get into that briefly in a minute. That brother had influence. Great deal of influence that only grew posthumously. They feared the hundreds and thousands, the masses of blacks under his influence. Garvey was an international black man. Hip-hop is an international black music. Believe me, his hip-hop is all over the place. You come to my site, nyoil1.ning.com, you'll meet German hip-hoppers. Hip-hoppers from Normandy, Norway, freaking, you know, all over the United States. You'd be blown away. Australia. It's hip-hoppers all over this world that rep this culture. So, to think that it's not plausible that they would be threatened by our ability to reach so many and then have, even if it's as clumsy as gangster rap, you see, because prior to gangster rap, why would something like gangster rap be promoted? Well, prior to gangster rap, what kind of rap was out? It wasn't happy-go-lucky rap, but they characterized brothers that was building as happy rappers. If you had something deep to say, you was considered a happy rapper, or you was trying to characterize you as soft. But the fact of the matter is, you was building. And them times, a lot of rappers was college-educated. You dig? And then this proliferation of gangster rap came to offset the value of the message. You got to remember, this was at a time when brothers was going to college hard-body. Because you had movies like Do the Right Thing out. You had The Real World? Or what was it? The one with Lisa Bonet. And when it was in the college. I forgot what the name of the college was back in the day. This is the Cosby Show days, though. When they were developing positive images for blacks. And blacks was really like, yo, I'm trying to go to college. I remember when I was a shorty, I was almost college age when... Do the Right Thing came out. I was fiending to go to Howard University. You dig it? And that was what it was. Everybody I knew was trying to get it in. That's Public Enemy was cranking Hard Body. You know what I'm saying? We was unprecedented numbers supporting when Yusef Hawkins got killed. You dig? So it was a different climate. But you know, that was when crack was whack. But then there was a sudden proliferation of gangster music that was supported with so much money and so much effort. It's bizarre how that managed to happen. So there it is, that influence. So without belaboring that particular point, let me just move on. Again, I apologize that I know I sound like I'm rushing. I'm rushing on point purpose because, you know, I don't want to spend too much time on anything. At the end of the day, you got to find out about the Black Star Line. Those were the ships by which we were meant to go back to Africa with. He actually purchased these ships. He actually did it. They existed. You know, there was more than one Black Star Line ship. He actually managed to finance them by selling stocks and bonds for the ships. And they built them joints, and they actually hit the water. But agents and saboteurs, the engines of the ship were actually damaged by foreign matter being thrown out into the fuel. Hoover also placed his agents so close to Garvey that anyone at the time, no one could imagine how close Hoover had agents next to Garvey. It was so close that this dude named Herbert Boulin, who had owned a Harlem-based black doll company, was like a very close confidant to Marcus Garvey. He was known as Agent P-138. He got so close to Garvey that was his ace deuce king. And Garvey confided in him at some point when he felt very isolated and doubtful. He had attempted to commit suicide and was considering suicide again. This is how in they got. So to think, oh, how you gonna get this person in there like that? How could they get, you know, who would have got in the middle of that? You know, or to diminish the value, like, you know, like that's some, not to go off on a tangent, but you know, sometimes you gotta be careful how comedians put stuff in the air, because comedians have this ability to put certain tones in the air that seem to resonate for a long time. And there was a joke that Chris Rock said. He's like, you know, people acting like, you know, Biggie Smalls and Tupac was assassinated. He said, them niggas, they wasn't assassinated. Them niggas was shot. You know, it ain't as simple as that. And you know, for it be as intelligent, and I'm sure it's a joke, and I know it's a joke, but he misses a big portion of what's going on to think it's as simple as that. Because now, remember I said A. Philip Randolph in 1917 invited Marcus Garvey to come speak? Checking, when Marcus Garvey arrived in Harlem seeking followers for his movement, Randolph became one of his strongest supporters. In the spring of 1917, Randolph, who at the time was a respected Harlem soapbox orator, presented Garvey to a Harlem audience and asked them to listen to the young man from Jamaica who was, quote, one of the militant black fighters for social and racial justice. Randolph was particularly impressed by Garvey's ability to reach masses of people with his spellbinding speaking voice. Ain't that kind of trippy? When you think about how Biggie and Tupac was peace at one point, right? But by 1920, however, Randolph and other influential black leaders have begun to question Garvey's motives and the overall feasibility of the Garvey movement. And the messenger began to publicly critique the movement. The opposition of Randolph, Owen and others eventually escalated into the Garvey Must Go campaign, calling for federal intervention of Garvey's deportation. Randolph specifically questioned the plausibility of a black shipping line and the creation of Universal Negro Improvement Association. You know, it's mind-blowing that someone like A. Philip Randolph would have questioned the plausibility of a black shipping line. Black economics. To have a distribution system or even have the ability to transfer from one place to the other is such a vital component of power in this world. To have doubted it, to question it, it speaks volumes. And if you read into it enough, my understanding is A. Philip Randolph might have been one of the Black Boule, which is something you want to read it. Again, it's a whole nother bill. I can't even get into that right now. I'm running out of time. Let's move forward a little bit to the Black Panthers. The FBI and the J. Edgar Hoover begins a program called COINTELPRO, Counterintelligence Program, to break up the spread and unity of revolutionary groups that have been solidifying through the work and examples of the Black Panthers. The Peace and Freedom Party, Brown Berets, Students for a Democratic Society, the SNCC, SCLC, Poor People's March, Cesar Chavez, and others in the Farm Labor Movement, the American Indian Movement, Young Puerto Rican Brothers, the Young Lords, and many others, to destroy the party. The FBI begins with a program of surgical assassinations, killing leading members of the party who they know cannot be otherwise subverted. Following the mass killings, there would be a series of arrests, followed by a program of psychological warfare designed to split the party, both politically and morally, through the use of espionage, provocateurs, and chemical warfare. Now, check this out. In 1996, the first Black Panther Free Breakfast for School Children's program is initiated in St. Augustine's Church in Oakland. By the end of the year, the Panthers set up kitchens in cities across the nation, feeding over 10,000 children every day before they went to school. All right. A few months later, J. Edgar Hoover publicly states that the Panthers are the greatest threat to the internal security of the country. You dig? And then in Chicago, the outstanding leader of the Panthers local, Fred Hampton, leads five different breakfast programs on the West Side, helps create a free medical center, initiates a door-to-door program of health services, which tests for sickle cell anemia and encourages blood drives for the Cook County Hospital. The Chicago Party also begins reaching out to the local gangs to clean up their acts, get them away from crime, and bring them into the class war. The party efforts meet wide success, and Hampton's audience and organized contingent grow day by day. On December 4th, 4 a.m. in the morning, thanks to information from an FBI informant, Chicago police raid the Panther's Chicago apartment, murdering Fred Hampton while he sleeps in bed. He's shot twice in the head, once in the arm and shoulder, while three other people sleeping in the same bed escape unharmed. It's mind-blowing. Let me just read another aspect of it, which is, a gentleman named Rogers states in this film that he put together in regards to the Panther. If you read the FBI files, you will see that even Mr. J. Edgar Hoover himself had to say that it was not the guns that were the greatest threat to the internal security of the United States of America. Listen to what it was. It was not the guns. It was the free children's breakfast program that was the greatest threat to the internal security of the United States of America. Grits. Now, why was it the Free Children's Breakfast Program? It was the Free Children's Breakfast Program because the Free Children's Breakfast Program engendered a certain following on the Black community's part, a certain respect on the Black community's part. I mean, nobody can argue with free grits. So Hoover saw it as a kind of, he saw the Free Children's Breakfast Program as a kind of, what's the word he used? He said it was a kind of, look in the file, you'll see. He said it was a kind of infiltration. I'm reading this. A kind of infiltration. That's ridiculous, isn't it? Infiltration. How are Black people who are born and raised in the Black community, who live and work in the Black community, going to infiltrate their own Black community? If anyone's infiltrating, I think it's J. Edgar Hoover. So you have this culture of doing exactly what happened with gangster rap. You know, there's a lot to this that I'm probably going to get into down the pipe, depending on the response to this. But, you cannot deny that this country is good for that. So to think that this sister was crazy, or for her to have to, for it to be, it's been this real. Look, this is the problem I have with it all, and I'm gonna close out this segment of it on this. And I'm probably gonna end up having to get into my calls. I'm gonna get into a couple of my calls, but not all of them. I'm gonna get to my dude voices call next podcast. But listen, this is the problem I'm having. It's a real slick thing that white media is doing right now, white power structure is doing. And it's starting to filter to white people generally, where they're reversing racism. If a Black man says anything implying racism, it's like, oh, you're throwing a race card. Oh, that didn't happen. No, because we're so ignorant of what occurred, because no one's passing on the stories, no one's being taking the effort to move forward and do some research, learn, figure out, take some time to read. We don't really know how deep and how nefarious this racism has been, and the foul, wicked things that they've done to us in this country, in America. And because we're not cognizant of it, we can't give a suitable response to what they're saying to us. So when they say, oh, you're throwing a race card in, and because there's been these race mongers, like your Reverend Al Sharpton's, your Jesse Jackson's, who seem to be like profiteering off of the race card, it devalues the sentiment and the truth of our frustration and angst and what they've done to us and what they continue to do. I'm going to go into this more, but I wanted to first kind of paint that picture to you, that this is what is going on in this country. And I'm not even, believe me, I'm spinning through this fast as I can to get to the bottom of it. I want to get to the bottom of it and say that Afeni Shakur, who is Tupac Shakur's mother, was a member of the Black Panther Party. Now, not to be confused with Asada Shakur, Afeni Shakur was, you know, she was a part of the Panther 21. While she was pregnant with her son, she was arrested for withholding information that could have led to the arrest of leading members of Panther 21. And while in prison, she actually retained a court order to have like boiled eggs per day because the food within jail was unfit for an expecting mother. And then she defended herself in court during a bomb conspiracy trial and was acquitted of 156 counts against her and other members of the Black Panther Party. No evidence was found to support the charges. And after her son was born, she ended up marrying Matulu Shakur, who became her son's stepfather, converted to Islam. But unfortunately, Matulu ended up getting locked up, and she ended up having to raise Shakur basically as a single mom. She's often penniless, homeless, and, you know, succumbed to crack at some point, but she managed to pull herself out, and she's doing her thing right now. Regardless of that, fact of the matter is that, you know, Tupac being a son of a Panther can't be just glossed over. Remember, this, she was a member of the New York 21 as a cadre of Panther leaders jailed by J. Edgar Hoover on fabricated charges of fomenting a race war. You have to understand, and this is, now we're talking about, if we're talking about all the way to 1971, right? Because he was born in 71. So we're talking about at least, if she was pregnant, he was, you know, this is, now we're talking about at least the 70, 1969, 1970. You dig? All of this is going on. Now remember, I told you that J. Edgar Hoover was in the game since 1919. So this man has been able to perpetuate his brand of bullshit, to put it bluntly, since 1919. For the entire, he's been influential. He's basically a madman who's been influential in the destruction of any sort of Black uprising on any level, be it positive, negative, be it socially motivated or militant. He's been in power to do this for the majority of this century. So to think that he don't got sons and daughters in this, in that agency that's continuing his work is a fool's hope. To think that it's not possible that gangster rap isn't perpetrated on point, on purpose rather, is just stupid. Truthfully, it's stupid for you to think that couldn't be that way. Was it done by the media on purpose? Vibe magazine sold more magazines during that time. They were the biggest, they were the ones that were most supporting that whole East Coast, West Coast war. They bigged that up to the infinite. And just of note, B.I.G. was murdered at an after party being thrown by the Vibe magazine. So, but that's another insinuation that I'm not prepared to get into. I'm not going to insinuate that Vibe magazine was involved in the murder of Biggie Smalls. All I'm saying is that it's a lot of bugged out coincidences. I'm going to probably try to have a guest on here at some point to give some more solid build on that, on the Tupac, Biggie, East Coast, West Coast build. But again, you know, I just think that, you know, we need to stop, to put it bluntly, dick rotting white media, corporate media. Yo, they're straight liars. And we need to stop expecting our leaders and people that we respect to have to always constantly apologize for saying what's true. Speak truth to power and speak truth to liars and stop being scared, y'all. You know, better days can come. Better days are here if we would stand up and just face them. Stop being scared. You know, that sister's has made a lot of money. And I don't know, maybe she shouldn't be scared, kid. But I'm not in her position, so I can't really speak for her. So all I can do is hope for the best for that sister. I'm happy that she tried to say something. I wish she could have stood by it. You dig what I'm saying? So with no further ado, let me jump in these calls, man. You know what I'm saying? We'll get into this another time. Definitely call in. The number's 562-06-339-8324. You know what I'm saying? I hope y'all enjoyed this. I'm going to jump into these calls real quick and then I'm out. It still lasted longer than I planned it, but, you know, I try to do it fast as I can. And, yeah, I'll see y'all soon, man. Let's get it in, man. I definitely need y'all calls. You know, give me y'all thoughts. Give me some subject matter. We're going to get it in. Hey, your voice, I'm going to get you a call on the next podcast. I might do another one quickly, you know, twice in a week just to get you your call. All right, my G?
Peace and love in my oil. This is your sister / fellow artist / fellow hip hopper legacy. I just wanted to send you some vibes of energy of peace, love, and progress. I'm up on everything you're doing. Me and my husband, we love you, and we pray for your continued success and elevation in this life and the next. One love. Peace.
Hey, Legacy, much love to you. You know what I'm saying? Thanks for taking the time to reach out and call in. You know, that's very important to me. I really appreciate it, and I really appreciate your support. This is a beautiful sister, y'all. Much love to you and your old man, your husband. You know what I'm saying? Tell that brother I said what's up. I had the pleasure to see them perform recently. And actually my daughter performed on the same stage with me that night. And she just got a beautiful voice and a great vibe. Great spoken word artist as well. So, and I just wish you all the best, sis, and continue to support. Make sure you keep coming to the website.
Hey, darling, this is Annabella from Holland. Just want to congratulate you with your new website. I'm loving it. And just wish you a good weekend. And I hope you're doing okay. Well, nothing even. You know, we. Anyway, have a nice weekend. Bye.
All right. Thanks so much, Annabella. You know, I really appreciate your support as well. You know, this is a sister from, Holland? Norway or something like that? Yeah. So, you know, but very, very helpful, very focused, an incredible businesswoman, an international woman that recognizes herself as a worldly woman and not a woman that's just, you know, stuck in a, you know, and on her block, you dig it? And so, you know, I'm looking forward to doing a lot of business with you, sis, and, you know, getting some things done and helping to uplift the culture. So I just want to thank you very much. I appreciate you giving the call, and I appreciate your support. And to all of you that support my program, thank you very much. To whom much is given, much is expected. And I promise to do the best that I can not to let y'all down. And, you know, again, I want to implore y'all to do your research. You know, I'd only scratched the very surface of this discussion, and I don't know that I did a great job of it either, to be honest with you, but I'm just trying to at least spark some of the, you know, the inhibitors in your mind and start looking for yourself to see what's going on. So, you know, let's get motivated. Let's get started. Better days are upon us if we would only take them. My name is NY Oil, and I approve this message.